street. You know, often people will say to me, what's the problem with the planet heating up? We just got to get more people air conditioning. And this study really looked at the sort of false illusion of security that air conditioning has kind of provided for us. It showed that in this blackout scenario, where you had a total blackout for 2 days and then 3 days of restoring power, which is not kind of beyond the pale of kind of reality at all. We had a 5 day blackout similar to that in Texas a few years ago. In that kind of a scenario, in a city like Phoenix, where there's virtually 100% penetration of air conditioning, you would have 800,000 emergency room visits and more than 13,000 deaths within 48 hours, which is hugely shocking and sort of disturbing findings. And what's interesting about this is the way that it shows that some of these that techno fixes like air conditioning and things, which are certainly important tools for living in hot climates, but they also amplify our vulnerability in ways that we don't really understand or are not aware of. And so air conditioning is sort of like this sort of sword of Damocles hanging over a city like Phoenix or a city like Austin or Houston or places like that that are completely dependent upon it. And it just shows this sort of our understanding of our vulnerability to extreme heat is far more complicated than we understand at first glance.
I mean, it's amazing, this report. In Phoenix, about 800,000 people, roughly half the population, would need emergency medical treatment for heat stroke and other illnesses. The flood of people seeking care would overwhelm the city's hospitals. More than 13,000 people would die. That's in Phoenix. And of course, that's a place that 99% of the buildings are air conditioned. Then you go to a place like Detroit that's even older, much less AC, and the number of people that would be affected, especially older people. And of course, AC causes more global warming. I was really struck in your piece by what you called not a Hurricane Katrina, but a heat Katrina.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, in comparing the three cities, the other in Atlanta and Detroit and Phoenix, the emergency room visits and death rate as a consequence of this 5 day blackout that I described are far lower in these other cities because of less dependence upon air conditioning. So in some ways, this are one of our sort of favorite techno fixes for a hotter world, air conditioning is increasing our vulnerability to that extreme heat. We're building buildings that don't have natural ventilation, that you know, you can't open windows in. So when the power goes out, they become like convection ovens and people die. And, you know, there are a lot of things that we can do to reduce this vulnerability. Things like solar panels on rooftops, microgrids, battery backup, so we're not so dependent upon the grid itself. And also building buildings that have passive cooling, that don't require air conditioning, that have natural ventilations, that are built in ways that are suitable for the hotter world that we're building for ourselves.
And of course, most of the rest of the world doesn't have that kind of access to air conditioning. I want to go down to the Yucatan, where our next guest is, Ruth Cerezo Mota. We just read this report about howler monkeys falling dead out of trees. If you can go from monkeys to human beings and what it means for Mexico right now, which is also, and Yucatan experienced a major heat wave, and yet at the same time, you've just elected your first woman president in Mexico, Claudia Sheinbaum, who is a climate scientist like yourself. In Mexico, nearly 61 people died from a record heat wave that just ended. Can you talk about all of this?
Yeah, hi. Yeah, we are experiencing really extreme weather. And I just want to complement something that you were saying about the air conditioner. Yeah, we need to consider that it's also an unfair situation because there is many people that will not be able to afford an air conditioning. So it's not really a solution either. So, but in any case, yes, people is dying here because of the heat. Animals, there was this report of hundreds of monkeys falling just from the trees. And before that, the week before that, there were parrots as well. And of course, here in Yucatan, most of the city has air conditioning, but not all the small towns. So yeah, it's a big problem. And yeah, on the very hot Sunday, last Sunday, we have elections and there was a massive participation and we got our first president. But I don't think it means good news in terms of environment, at least not now. When she was a mayor in Mexico City, there was a couple of things that she did that clearly was against or was not eco-friendly. Like, for example, she built a bridge for cars. And in order to do that, they destroyed part of a wetland that it was of the very last natural reserves in Mexico City, which it turns out it didn't solve the problem. So it didn't solve the traffic that was supposed to be the problem. And because it was done all over the wetlands, when it's the rainy season, it gets flooded. So then you have floodings, you destroy part of the environment of the reserve, and you didn't solve the issue that was the traffic in that area. Also, while she was in campaign, she promises to continue what López Obrador is doing. She's talking about the Tren Maya that we know it has several impacts in the environment. There has been a deforestation of at least 10 million trees. They have polluted the water. They have injected concrete on water holes. And we're here in the peninsula. We don't have water surface bodies. We all depends on underground water, and now that water is polluted by concrete and all and metals that they have injecting to build the railroad. So definitely, in terms of environment, at least now it's not a good news. So maybe once that Claudia start her period, maybe she's distance herself from López Obrador and all these programs that go against the environment.
I wanted to go.
It's not a clear evidence of that.
I wanted to go to a clip. The heat wave also killing those 150 howler monkeys found dead on the forest floor, according to Mexico's environment ministry, due to heat stroke, dehydration, malnutrition, or the spraying of crops with toxic agrochemicals. This is Mexican biologist Gilberto Pozas in the Mexican state of Tabasco.
We have registered 83 dead specimens. There are also orphaned calves because many adult females have died, have managed to survive. That is the problem with this species mortality in this very hot season in the state. The temperatures have reached 123 degrees Fahrenheit, and the wildlife is suffering because of the lack of water. There's been a lot of habitat degradation, so there is more light penetration, higher temperatures, and water scarcity. Above all, there's been an increase in the number of fires that damage the few habitats or refuges for these species.
Dr. Ruth Sede-Somoto, would you like to elaborate on that, the flora, the fauna, and how all life is affected?
Yeah, definitely. These extreme events that are becoming more frequent and more intense, and we knew that before. We knew that we have already observations all around the world in different regions that these extreme events will become more often and more frequent and more intense when they happen. And not only the heat wave, but floodings and extreme precipitation. So we knew all this, and we have been saying this for many, many years now. So it takes a toll in everything. So it affects health, it affects biodiversity, it affects we at the same time that we experience a heat wave, we also experience a very dry season. We are coming from last year as well. It was very low levels of precipitation that we have here in the country, partially because of El Nino, but partially because of this climate change. So there is no water. We have experienced as well, not only Mexico, but in very a lot of parts of the world, fires. We are getting these compound events in which you have all the perfect conditions for fires, for events that wouldn't happen otherwise. So we have dry a dry environment, windy, and a lot of organic material. So then you have the perfect conditions to start the fires. And because it's so hot and because it's so little water, it's very hard to control those fires. So it's a massive devastation, plus the animals that they are dying because they are not able to adapt to this heat that we are experiencing. It's not normal. So even though here, the peninsula of Yucatan, normally we experience a hot weather, what we are experiencing right now goes beyond of what it's normal. So we are, plus it has lasted for more than 1 month, but that we have had these conditions of 45 maximum degrees centigrade, and the minimums of 38, 35. So really not that minimum is not, it's not healthy anymore, not for humans, not for environment. And it doesn't seem that it's going to end soon. So, it is.
We're going to end with Jeff Goodell. If you could comment on climate refugees as President Biden tries to shut down the border, the U.S.-Mexico border, limit the number of people who can come, the reasons people leave their countries and what they're affected by, and also the laws that prevent people, like in Texas, the attempt to stop people from even getting workers, getting water breaks.
Yeah, well, you know, the one of the, kind of rules of life is that when conditions get too intolerable, too hot, in this case, living things move on to find more suitable climates. That's what humans do. That's what, plants do. That's what animals do. We all have to, in order to survive, find our kind of what I call in my book, our Goldilocks zone, where it's not too hot, not too cold. And, what happens when it gets too hot, crops fail, water sources fail, people move on. And that is what's happening at the U.S. border. Migration is a very complex topic. There's lots of reasons why people are on the move, but certainly climate change and crop failure and water scarcity is a big part of that. And so we're going to see a more chaotic planet as the climate heats up. In my book, I call heat the engine of planetary chaos, and that's what we're talking about here. So we're going to see more people trying to move across boundaries. We're going to see more politics driven by that kind of resistance to migration. We're seeing it in the United States right now. We're seeing it in Europe. We will see more and more of that. And in states like Texas, where I live, we have a governor who's a hard right MAGA Republican who has decided that, he has passed legislation or signed legislation that prohibits any city or municipality in the state from passing any laws that require shade breaks or water breaks for workers during extreme heat conditions. The politics of this are perverse, they are brutal, they are barbaric, but that is the way our world is moving. Idea that Governor Abbott has is a loss of productivity by giving people shade breaks, but it's really going back to the old kind of coal mining days where productivity is elevated above human life.
Well, we're going to continue to talk about this, of course, as we move into these incredibly hot summer months. And even those who have access to shade are determined by their wealth, particularly thinking of the unhoused population. Jeff Goodell, we want to thank you so much for being with us. New York Times piece you will link to that you just wrote, The Heat Wave Scenario That Keeps Climate Scientists Up at Night, author of The Heat Will Kill You First, Life and Death on a Scorched Planet. And we want to thank Dr. Ruth Sedosa Mota, climate scientist from the Institute of Engineering at National Autonomous University of Mexico, today speaking to us from Yucatan. When we come back, Black Women's Voices, the focus of a project from V-Day, the global activist movement to end violence against all women, gender expansive people, girls, and the earth. It's called Voices, a Sacred Sisterscape. Back in 20 seconds.
the soil in my pot. The house plants singing in the light of an open window. Was it breakfast you wanted, or to feel the hunger of a new dawn? In my living room before you posed for a portrait by the record player and perched your lips like a blues song, shooing the shy places within. We ate mushrooms for breakfast and listened for what bloomed in our decaying minds. I followed the yes in my body and let you read the footsteps between our eyes.
Can't Look Away by Nico Segal, featuring Jamila Woods and Aja Monet. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. We end today back here in New York City, where on Wednesday, the Empire State Building was lit up in red and gold to mark the 90th anniversary of the legendary Apollo Theater in Harlem. Well, the Apollo stages at the Victoria next door just hosted the launch of a new project and campaign by V-Day that's grounded in Black women's stories. V-Day is the global activist movement to end violence against all women and girls. The project is called Voices, a Sacred Sisterscape. This is part of the introduction to the audio play.
You are the sun. Where are you running to? Mother asked. Deeply concerned as we darted to hide under the shade. A shield from the sun? The cracks on our skin, she said, are a celebration of life. She could never understand the pride garnered from polished clay pot faces. In her heydays, every mark told a story. Laughter and tears amongst her sisters. A household feared and frowned upon when men came to pick wives. Laughing behind grandmother's back, tattooing their arms and legs with memories. The sweetest fruits have spots, she'd say. Let the sun burn. Run in the wild. Dance with the bees. Pet the cubs. Fight the hyenas. Be a girl of the savannah. Drink with the elephants. Swim with the hippos. Bathe with the flamingos. Be a girl of the Sahara.
The voice of Mumbi Kaigwa, reading a piece by Ursula Nyaboke Gesemba called You Are the Sun, in the opening of the audio play from V-Day called Voices, a Sacred Sisterscape. And this is another part of the play. This part was written by Frida Ndala Mukufa and read by Tishana Maddox. It's called My Rapist.
Why do we say my rapist? Like, does he belong to me? What part of him belongs to me? What part of him resides within me? What part of his is left with me? Why is he mine? I say my rapist like I'm proud to call him mine. I'm forced to say my rapist because it's double rape now. It identifies who I am. He makes up my identity. Someone I never asked to own. Someone I never wanted to own. Why is he always accompanied by my anger? Why does he fuel how I feel? Why is it that he is attached to my memories? Why is he mine?
Another excerpt from Voices, a Sacred Sisterscape. For more, we're joined by the project's director, Aja Monet, the Grammy-nominated poet and artistic creative director of V-Day's Voices campaign, and also with us, V, formerly known as Eve Ensler, founder of V-Day and 1 Billion Rising. Her Obie Award-winning play, The Vagina Monologues, has been translated into 48 languages. Her memoir is Reckoning. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Aja, let's begin with you. I was privileged to be in the Apollo stages last Friday. It was actually right before a whole group, about 1,000 people, shut down the Brooklyn Museum around Palestine and the issue of divestment. But if you can talk about what you're doing with this project, considered a continuation of Vagina Monologues to be performed all over the world, or at least to be heard by many.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. First, I think in a time of extreme environmental violence, racial violence, and gender violence, I think it's a result of a lack of political imagination. And we know that art is an invitation to expand our participation in the world and the ways that we see the world. So we want this project to be in the legacy of projects like the Vagina Monologues for Colored Girls and the many ways that art has mobilized people to really go inward and then to examine their convictions about the ways that they show up in the world. And so that's really the impetus of this project, is to be an exploration of the interior landscape and how that manifests in the decisions we make towards each other.
And if you can talk about centering Black women's voices, when this project came into being.
Yeah, so we began this project with an invitation by V to myself to be a part of V-Day, which is a global movement to end violence against women and girls, the Vagina Monologues. As you mentioned, it has an incredible legacy and tradition of using art to mobilize communities around all the many issues that we face, you know, in terms of sexual violence, assault, environmental violence, racial violence. And so post, I guess it would be the uprisings of 2020, even though we know that the movement for Black Lives has started long before that moment. But after George Floyd, I think it really encouraged the sort of invitation for people to look and examine themselves in the ways that they're showing up more deeply. And V had already been thinking about how to move the Vagina Monologues a little bit further from the center of the movement for V-Day. And so this moment sort of sparked, I think, the initiation of that urgent call to action to make something else the center of our work. And especially knowing that Black women are often at the forefront of our movements, our social movements, and Black feminism and what it has done for our movements, I think it just seemed appropriate for the time.
And V, if you can take it from there, in fact, that night, that day, it was afternoon, though it seemed like night, in the very dimly lit room where people had headphones on and were putting eye masks on to sit back and absorb the voices from around the world. You were sitting next to the great playwright Anna Deavere Smith, who read this amazing transcript, if you will, I should say, performed it, embodied it, of Mike Wallace interviewing the great playwright Lorraine Hansberry. But talk about what this really moment where you and Aja Monet have put out this piece that's going to be released around the world and how it's going to be released.
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you for having us on. And I'm so proud of Aja and her whole team of amazing women who have created this piece out of, you know, there were 900 submissions of Black women around the world, and they have woven this into this stunning, stunning piece with Lefembert, who created the music and made a offering in a moment where we are seeing books and histories being censored, where we're shutting down discourse. And it's so critical at this moment to tell our stories, to hear deeply. I loved Aja's whole vision of this piece, which is rather than looking at Black women, we needed to put our headphones on and our masks, and we needed to go into our minds and go into our beings and do embodied listening, where we heard stories, where we heard dreams, where we heard terrors, where we heard experiences we might not know. And through that, we begin to understand where we all connect, where we are all aligned. I think when we can hear each other's stories, when we can do deep, deep listening, that's when hate dissolves. That's when divisions dissolves. And I think, you know, just being in that room up at the Apollo and seeing all those people lying on couches and lying on mats and really being with each other deeply in the listening to the stories and to the dreams and to the visions of Black women was such a powerful experience for so many people, and will be as this piece begins to spread out into the world.
So let's play another clip from Voices. This is called Prison.
My name is Rosalind Smith, and I thought I would die in prison. The day I got the decision from the parole board saying that I was going to be released was one of the happiest days in my life. While in prison, I had all these hopes and dreams about what my freedom would look like. I was going to get a job, find a place for me and my daughter to live, travel, enjoyed all the things that I missed while I was incarcerated. But to my surprise, none of those dreams panned out the way I thought. Prison didn't prepare me for reentry. I was incarcerated in 1979 and came home 39 years later in 2018. I was stuck in a time warp. Tokens were metro cards, phones were cellular, letters were emails. I returned to a world that I was foreign to, and the world that I was in didn't give me any kind of skills to carry forth. I was trying to establish myself in a new community, and I was at the age of people retiring, preparing for retirement at least. I was free from prison, but not from the struggles or stigma of a formerly incarcerated woman.
That's the voice of Rosalind Smith from the Peace Prison, which is part of this medley, this mosaic, this collage of voices from around the world, part of Voices, Sisterscape. Aja Monet, how and when is this being released?
Thank you for asking. Well, it's going to be released on June 11th across the globe on all streaming platforms. Something we want to also illustrate or to demonstrate for people is that while this is an audio player, an audio experience, it has been a campaign. So before it first launches on June 11th, we also premiered a launch in Ghana in, I think it was December 22nd, 2022. It was with Angela Davis, and it was an effort for us to not just be about the aesthetic phenomenon about art, but real life, to transform us from being, solidarity is about us being not just spectators, but actors in the reality of our lives. And so this is the way we've launched this and the way that we've campaigned the project is to also be in process with one another as Black women, that we're so diverse across our identities and across the ways that we culturally express ourselves. And I think that that's something that I hope people take away with, that it's not just about what we have endured and our oppression and the things that we've experienced, but also who we've become in spite and because of those things, and what ways we've fostered relationships and community and movements because of the perspectives and sort of the interior examination that those issues, troubles, tribulations have spawned in us. And so it'll be launched on June 11th with the support of Blackstone, and it'll be on all streaming platforms. And we hope people will take the piece into their communities and organize their own listening exhibitions and community centered sort of, spaces with one another to really engage in embodied listening. Mm.
Well, I want to thank you both for being with us. The date is June 11th, that Voices will be released around the world on every streaming platform. I want to thank Aja Monet, the artistic creative director of V-Day's Voices campaign. It's called Voices, a Sisterscape. And also V, formerly called Eve Ensler, founder of V-Day and 1 Billion Rising. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Sharifa Bokadus, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warnoff, Trina Nadura, Sam Malkoff, Tamaria Studio, Robbie Karen, Hani Masood, Hannah Elias, our executive director, Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is Free Voices at CJSF 90.1 FM, talking to you about
Eagle Nation Universal Production Society. We are 10 board of directors, and we are rejoicing for world history. Our show is based on true stories, musical and storytelling and role-playing, silent crimes broken, very interesting series of show.
And a lot of in-depth oral tradition. We play every Thursday from 3 to 4. Come and join us.